This is the Friday Show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald. We're here with Lane County Senior Public Health Officer, Dr. Patrick Ludke. Hi, Dr. Ludke.
Happy Friday, Rachel.
Well, thanks. Thank you so much. Before we get to listener questions, can you give us a snapshot of how Lane County is doing with COVID-19 cases, vaccines, and what's making you hopeful this week?
Sure. So, unfortunately, we have a bit of an uptick in cases, and in a way, we were expecting it. Our community has this harmonized spring break across the middle schools and high schools and elementary schools as well as colleges. So a lot of people leave the end of March and then they come back. And unfortunately, we expected to get an uptick in cases, and that's what we are seeing. We had cratered down in the 10, 12 cases a day for a couple weeks through parts of March. And now over the last 10 days, we're back up to 25, 30, 35 cases a day. So that's the bad news. We're on track to be at moderate risk or maybe even high risk if that blip continues. The good news is vaccination continues. We continue to vaccinate 15 to 20,000 people in this county every single week, which is wonderful. So we're getting immunity that way. And I guess in the sunshine, want to remain hopeful. It's a bright, sunny day.
Well, what are some ways we can be taking care to not get to that moderate risk or you know, slip down farther in terms of COVID-19 spread?
Well, certainly we're not out of the woods yet. These new cases are telling us the virus is still out there and it's still readily circulating and still causing people to become sick. You know, right now, at this moment, we have 9 people in the hospital and 2 people on a ventilator with COVID in Lane County. Now, that's a big drop-off from where we were in November, December, January, but still, that's 9 people in the hospital with severe disease. We have 243 people as of this morning who are infectious with COVID in our county. So it's still out there, so continue to practice what you've been hearing for months and months, wearing a mask and avoiding large gatherings practicing appropriate social distancing and washing your hands frequently and cleaning high-touch surfaces. So nothing new in that regard. But one new thing that is really hopeful, at least it's hopeful to me, I hope it's hopeful to listeners, there was a big study released last week amongst about 4,000 healthcare workers. And those workers were fully vaccinated, and they were followed for 3 months from December through March. And they also had PCR testing for COVID done every week to see how well the vaccine was working. And 90% of those healthcare workers did not get reinfected. They had negative PCR tests every single week, despite being in a high-risk, exposure-oriented type of enterprise, being in healthcare. So in the real world, these vaccines are 90% effective, and that in and of itself is really heartening or encouraging. But it happened during a time where we already have some of those variants out there, those mutations we're concerned about, and we still got 90% effectiveness. And these vaccines, if our listeners remember, were approved to prevent COVID disease. We didn't know if they prevented COVID infection. So here we are now with a really good study and 4,000 people saying all their tests were negative week after week after week. So they prevented COVID infection too. And that is really encouraging.
Okay, but I have to point out that
<Uh-oh>.
Well, the Oregon Health Authority did report this week that a small number of cases where Oregonians who'd received their full vaccinations did later contract COVID-19. These breakthrough cases, we heard of 169 breakthrough cases in the state and 3 people who died.
Yeah, that's true. And unfortunately, that is to be expected. No vaccine is perfect. And this is, as I just said, 90% real-world effectiveness in this study. Does not mean 100% effectiveness. So some people will indeed get infected. We have seen repeatedly that those people who do, despite being vaccinated, they're mild infections. We don't have all the data on the 3 people who were fully vaccinated and became infected and died. I have not seen the data that said they died of COVID. We know that they died with COVID. They had a positive test. I don't know that, but we are not going to have a perfect vaccine that prevents all infections or all deaths, unfortunately. That's the way this science works.
And apparently it's a small percentage, 169 out of more than 700,000 Oregonians who are now fully vaccinated. What other, you know, you just mentioned other data that we have on the efficacy of the vaccines in the real world. What other data are you tracking regarding the vaccines?
Well, we're tracking more and more the sequencing data. So, you know, typically in the clinical world, we don't much care about sequencing because it doesn't change your therapy. Either you have an antiviral or antibiotic that works or you don't. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, variant A, B, D, or Z. It just doesn't matter. So we now have laboratories in the state of Oregon doing that sequencing, which is great. Instead of sending it all the way to the laboratory for the CDC in Atlanta and waiting a few weeks for results, we get results in a few days, which is great. So we're tracking sequencing data. We have seen the California variant up here in Lane County. We've seen one case of the Brazil variant in Douglas County. And I suspect as we get through the sequencing data from people returning from spring break, they traveled somewhere else that has those mutants, those variants circulating, we're probably going to see in the next few days a few of them, like the UK variant, show up here in Lane County. And we are really looking at that closely.
Well, on that topic, I do have a listener question. Here we go.
My name is Josephine. I'm from Eugene, Oregon, and I have a question about COVID-19 variants. If people with full vaccination get affected with any variant, how sick would they be? And also, would they die from it? Very concerned. I would like this question be answered so I have peace of mind. I don't have peace of mind after the full vaccination because of the variants.
I like the way she stated the question and its parts. So right now, the data that we have available, and again, it's not complete data, right? These vaccines came to market during a pandemic. And I will say as a preamble, we normally study vaccines not only for safety and efficacy, but we try to work them into the system with all the other vaccines. So we want to find out, can you give the flu vaccine the same day you give, let's say, the diphtheria vaccine? That has been studied. Well, we didn't have time to study that. So we don't know everything about these vaccines that we wish we knew. However, we do know from an increasing number of studies in various countries that have these variants circulating that the existing messenger RNAs, the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine, are working just fine with the UK variant, with the Brazil variant, with the South Africa variant. Now, what I think troubles people is you will see a study, a well-run study, and it reports and says it's you're getting less antibody production with vaccine A to the South Africa variant. And that is true in some of those studies. But it's still above the threshold that provides protection in humans. So those of us in the public health space continue to watch those studies really closely, and we're encouraged repeatedly with study after study that at least for what's circulating now, the vaccines are working as we want them to, and they're preventing COVID disease. So the last part of her question is, if you get it, could you die? Well, yes, there could be a mutant out there that eventually mutates so much it mutates outside of control of our vaccines and those antiviral medications that we have. We haven't seen those yet. There is one variant, the South Africa variant, has mutated a bit outside of some of the antivirals. They're significantly less effective. We will still give those therapies. They won't be as good. But none of them have mutated outside of effectiveness of the vaccines. We keep watching to make sure that we know that's true, and so far it is.
Well, here's a question from Jan that we got on the email. I have had COVID twice, early March for 4 months and again in October for 5 months. I've been paying attention to other long haulers who have had different responses to the vaccines. I hesitate vaccination because I've had problems with mild long-term symptoms from influenza vaccines, so I'm curious what you know about this situation.
Oh, my. First of all, I'm sorry. That's miserable to have it twice, and then to have it twice for a few months. If I heard you correctly, Rachel, 4 months the first time, 5 months the second time, that's just miserable. That's the better part of your year, basically, being COVID. So we are learning more and more and more about COVID. And what I would say is there are some parallels to some other conditions that I've been dealing with in my clinical career for a long time. So, for example, I suspect there are listeners who've heard of rheumatic fever. It is a syndrome where, among other things, your heart valves are attacked by your immune system that happens after a strep infection. Many of us have had strep infections, strep throat, strep skin infections. A tiny percentage of people will go on to get this antibody response, and some of those antibodies ultimately end up attacking your heart, and you get rheumatic fever. You no longer have the strep bacteria inside of you causing a chronic infection, but you have this revved up immune system. So there's a parallel, we think, to some people with long COVID. Another parallel is that in conditions like Lyme disease, and this is a tough one, some people have Lyme disease and they're miserable for a long time, for years, literally. And it appears as though many attempts to go in there and culture the bacteria from joint fluid and from the blood and from the throat, from the skin, they just don't find it. And yet the immune system is revved up and attacking your joints, giving you arthritis, et cetera. And there are parallels, we think, with long COVID in that space. But long COVID is not a single syndrome. Some people have predominantly these neurological manifestations, trouble with concentration and the brain fog, I think many have heard about. Other people have cardiac manifestations or just renal, just kidney manifestations. So it appears as though it's not just one type of syndrome. So if there is one area where there seems to be a fair amount of gathering data and commonality across many people with long COVID, but not all, it's this nervous system being affected. So dysautonomia, your autonomic nervous system, the nervous system you don't control, that controls your sweating and your heartbeat and your digestion, that part of the nervous system seems to be affected in quite a few people who have long COVID. And if you think about all of those systems that could give you symptoms if they were affected, if you can't control your blood pressure very well, well, you don't get blood up to your head, and your blood needs head all the time. Your head needs blood all the time to make sure you can think and concentrate. So that would be one symptom. And if you can't keep your blood pressure up high enough, you're going to feel lightheaded, and you're going to have challenges in those organs that need a lot of blood flow, like your heart, like your brain. So a lot of people are looking at this dysautonomia, and we're learning a good deal more about it and treating people as if they have this autonomic nervous system effect and getting some good responses.
And so in a case like this, would you recommend that this person check with their own primary care provider regarding whether to get the vaccine or not?
Yes, thank you for bringing me back to the questioner. So absolutely, your primary care provider knows you better than anyone, and that's where you should start. And he or she can decide to proceed on their own or to make a consultation to, let's say, a neurologist to assess some of these effects. And it is encouraging that we're hearing a fair number of people who have some of these long COVID symptoms are getting vaccinated and getting better. And it's interesting to me that you're driving the immune system to respond to the vaccine, and that may impact the already revved up immune system that's causing all of these symptoms. So I'm not going to say on the air, go get vaccinated if you have long COVID, but this person I think would really benefit from talking with the primary care provider and perhaps a consultant, a specialist, to decide if that's a good way for her.
You're listening to The Friday Show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald. We're with Lane County Public Health's Dr. Patrick Ludke. And Dr. Ludke, we have an email question from Marilyn who wants to know, when you are fully vaccinated, can you visit in someone else's house without masks on, even if they are not vaccinated?
Well, we would prefer you did not. Our recommendations is if people are fully vaccinated, they can congregate in homes. But that needs to go on both sides, both families. Again, keep in mind that you being fully vaccinated gives you a sense of protection, but the vaccines are not perfect, and the persons you may visit may be at a higher level of risk, and you really want to be careful for their benefit too. And don't feel as though you're completely bulletproof when you're fully vaccinated. Certainly you're most likely in a much better position than being non-vaccinated, but you may not be, you may be one of the 1 in 10 that don't develop neutralizing antibody and complete protection. So keep that in mind.
Okay, and here's another question. This has to do with little kids.
My name is Jill, and I live in Eugene. My husband and I have 4 granddaughters under the age of 12 from 2 households. 3 of them are involved in youth activities, always masked. My question is, can they come together into our home and play unmasked with one another?
So that's playing, not sleeping overnight. So typically, we want to avoid these congregate people coming together from multiple different households. And I guess maybe I'll start with the good news first. So today, one of the vaccine manufacturers submitted their phase 3 trial data for ages 12 and up, and that's the Pfizer vaccine. So they submitted to the FDA. Probably, if the past is a predictor of the present, the vaccine will be reviewed quickly, and we may very well be able to say we now have a vaccine for age 12 and above, and that may capture this caller's situation. But we're not at a point right now where we want to have multiple homes coming together. And if people are fully vaccinated on, say, let's say there's 2 families of 4 people each. If they're fully vaccinated, teenagers and parents on both sides, all 8 people, they can come together. The risk is low. The risk is not zero. Again, remember, these vaccines are not 100% effective, but the risk is very low. And they can come together and without masks, and they can enjoy each other's company. But when you start putting multiple families together, the risks increase significantly, and especially when they're not vaccinated, that's a real challenge. So we want to avoid that for now. We'll get there, I suspect, in the coming weeks. And I'm hoping by midsummer we'll have at least some semblance of a pretty normal summer.
So for this question, it was kids under 12.
Unvaccinated, therefore, by definition.
Yeah. Now, I did have another question from Niels, who emailed asking about the latest child vaccine studies. They're asking about when their 15-year-old will be eligible and any guidance on sleepovers for the 15-year-old.
Okay. So, again, Pfizer submitted today to the FDA, and for the last few vaccines, the FDA met very quickly and, you know, within a couple weeks. So if we walked out that timeline, submitted today, FDA could get together their advisory committee, and by the end of April, they would have an approved vaccine, and then it would start becoming available because the Pfizer vaccine is already on the market. We wouldn't have to wait for some warehouse full of vaccine to be sent around the country. So we could definitely see vaccine for this 15-year-old the first part of May. There's not going to be an unlimited amount, right? There's, you know, we have a full country of 15-year-olds that will need it. But it may be on the market. What was the second part of the question, Rachel?
I think you pretty much covered it, that for now it sounds like a sleepover for an unvaccinated teen is not a good idea, but that might change.
Correct.
Soon. Okay. Well, now we're going to ask you to look ahead into your crystal ball, and this has to do with events in the summer. So here's the question.
Hello, I'm Albie Tumsin. I live in Springfield. I am an organizer of a festival playing flutes, and we're going to have the event the third week of July, and I was wondering if it was even safe. We've been debating back and forth to know if we're going to organize it or not. Right now, the restrictions are 50 people. Hopefully, that will change to more. What do you think we can do? Thank you.
A flute festival. Wow. First of all, I want to go. Such, you know, flutes are just such a wonderful, soft, melodic sound. So, I am really hopeful. I think that the second half of July, as he said, we will be able to hold events of that sort. I'm not ready to say it can be 10,000 people. So where do I draw the line? Well, it's going to be more than 50 people, especially for outdoor events. I would suggest to him, if he's the planner of it, late July in Lane County is stunningly beautiful. Very rarely is there any rain. Plan an outdoor event. Make it in a place where the acoustics are good enough so you're able to hear everybody together. You're better at that, I'm sure, than I am. But that event can go forward with probably several hundred people. The only spoiler to that is if any of these variants really get a hold or we get a real shortage of vaccine, the promised pipeline doesn't get full of vaccine. But I don't believe either one of those are going to happen. I think that we're going to have a nice July.
And speaking of the summer, we had this email from Don. He says, with the Olympic trials coming to Eugene in June, is it safe or even ethical to open up our home on Airbnb for out-of-town guests?
Oh, my, that's a good question. We are working very closely with the university. In fact, I spent several hours there last weekend with Tracktown and with the Olympic Committee touring the sites and trying to make sure that that's all going to be safe for the Olympic trials in June. I have confidence it will be, and there will be a few thousand spectators allowed. But his question regarding out-of-town people in the Airbnb, well, are you going to be in the home too, or are you renting out completely? And it's just, let's say, a couple who want to come to the trials. If it's just the two of them, they've already exposed themselves at their own home, wherever their home is, sure, I think go ahead. But if you're going to be in the home and renting out a room and sharing, you know, a breakfast space and restrooms and everything else, then I would ask about their vaccine status and look at your vaccine status, too. Are you protected before committing to that? Because you want to make sure that you're safe and keep our community safe, too.
Well, that's interesting that you're consulting on the Olympic trials. Kind of what are some of the things that you've been looking at and learning about as you're having those tours and those conversations?
So I'm happy to discuss that. So we have a template, a real standard template, but then every event, athletic event or other event, is a little bit different. But the standard template is you really want to make sure the ingress and the egress is kept safe because that's when people bunch up in big groups and they can expose each other. So making sure that that's safe and then making sure if there's any food at the site that people can bunch up and wait in line, right, for their food, their bottle of water, their glass of beer. You want to make sure that that is made safe as well. And then signage is really important. You have to remind people. They might get caught up in you know, being an American at the Olympic trials and a lot of patriotism and such and forget that you need to wear your masks and you need to do social distancing. And over here, by the way, is where the hand sanitizer is if you want to hand sanitize. So we focus on a lot of those real common things. And then each event has unique things. So where are the reporters going to be? They're going to want to talk to somebody. This is an official event, and there could be a world record set, and they're going to want to interview that athlete immediately. How do we make sure that happens in a safe way? So each event has a fairly standard number of items and then a few unique ones.
Well, that's exciting.
It is indeed really exciting. The facility, well, wait until the public sees it. Oh, my gosh, it's stunning, the new Hayward Field.
Well, that's a great note to end on. Thank you so much, Dr. Ludke.
Happy to meet you, as always, Rachel.
Dr. Patrick Ludke is Senior Public Health Officer with Lane County. I'm Rachel McDonald. We had production help from Angela Kellner. You can send your questions for next week's Friday show to news@klcc.org as an email or voice memo, and you can leave us a voicemail question at 503-877-3198, and you can find this show and other Friday shows at our website, klcc.org.